So my friend Jeff, who's also a pilot, he has something interesting. He's an interesting parallel to what you're talking about, as far as like the runway is the runway, and there's no question about that. Like, if you don't if you think it's going to be giving, it won't be, right? He's got a very unforgiving way of looking at life as well. Like, this is the way it is, and this is the reality. Jeff and I have been friends for a while, and we moved to Denver, and we actually use his office. So we the Dow, well, my company's called Badass Ventures. Mm-hmm. The Badass Ventures office is in his basement. So he's
okay.
He's got an office up in this like old mansion, mm-hmm. and then the basement of the mansion is the Badass Ventures office, and he lets us stay there for free, which is awesome because he likes to talk about stuff like this sometimes, but more about business and everything.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you mentioned that the sort of reality is a reality thing, because when I met Jeff, it was one of the first things I noticed about him too. I'm not sure if it's a pilot thing or that's what draws you to being a pilot or what, like that. Looking for that stability in the world or something?
Oh, I can tell you exactly. What draws me about is all of this subjective stuff that I didn't and still getting a handle on no longer applies.
Oh, yeah, there was objective truth at this point.
There is objective truth. Your hands are on the controls. You've got the throttle. And your feet are doing anything. You take your hands off the controls of a Robinson R-22 helicopter, and within 2 seconds, you're either dead or in an unrecoverable attitude.
Yeah.
That's not perception. That's
just the way it is.
That's just the way it is.
Right.
So it's very freeing,
right?
For a guy who grew up having to really work my ass off to understand just the basics.
Uh-huh.
It's a break.
Yeah.
Right? It's a break from all of this.
Yeah.
Don't have to pay attention to you. It's not perception. It's, no, this is physics.
Right. And that concept, like, Jeff he's like an Excel genius. So he likes, it's the same kind of concept. Everything makes sense in Excel, right? Like, it's either the numbers are right, the numbers are wrong, and you can see that clearly by looking at the cells in the Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
It's very, very simple to understand. But what Jeff is running away from is something that I've accepted, which I notice in myself. And that is that nothing in Maya's world here is black and white. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Not even flying an airplane is black and white in the social world. That's a mechanical thing to do, and so that's an amazing break. And I have things like that too, actually. For myself, like something I do is to take a break from anything, but usually I just shut my brain off. Like, I'll watch a movie, you know?
Yeah.
And I really love sci-fi and fantasy because it's another world that I don't understand at all. I don't even pretend to understand it, so I'll just, like, watch it, and then I'm not watching drama. Like, I don't really like drama because that's stuff that I could imagine happening in real life, and I'm like, why would I watch a movie about something I could just go out and see, you know? I want something that I can experience that's new for me, you know? So I don't know if you... how old are you?
33.
So you're 3 years older than me. And I had... I don't know when the first time you really saw... If you ever saw, but probably you did. But you saw Star Wars?
Yeah, like 10 or something.
Young, really young?
Yeah.
At that point, we had already kind of been exposed to other forms of CGI and stuff that were in movies. But this was, like, different. There's something different about Star Wars, you know? It wasn't like the rest of the movies. It was like, it was as if everything that was happening was really, really, really happening somewhere. You know, like the things were fucking floating. And do you remember whenever Back to the Future came out? And he had like a hoverboard.
Yeah.
You know the hoverboard thing.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, how'd they do that? Like, that's fucking phenomenal. Because I can't. To me, it's possible. You know, as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, seeing something that's outside my reality, turning my brain off is really seeing what's possible, you know? And some of it's impossible, but that doesn't matter in that moment. In that moment, that thing is possible, and that opens me back up again. And still, to this day, I have an association with seeing things that I think are impossible, and I automatically try to accept them as true, just to see what it's like, to live in a world where hoverboards are possible, you know? And any kind of progress we've ever made as a society is made because of this, you know? Not because of me. Definitely not because of me. I haven't done much for society. If anything, I've done a lot to tear it down, you know? Not a whole lot to build it back up again. But ultimately, I have this comfort around the impossible. The comfort around the subjective nature of our realities, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And when I think about things like that, it makes me feel free. It makes me feel like I can create my world, you know? And I really like that a lot. So that's a true story. So this is all true. I have no idea what I'm going to say when I start talking, but that's a true story.
Okay.
The difference, though, between you and me is that I'm not trying to get something done. You're trying to get something done. And that is, you're trying to get acceptance for who you have been in the past, who you were.
Yep.
That's got to go away. Like, you've got to accept yourself first for having that. That's all the things that it made about who you are. You're always going to be projecting the movie of your life through the filter of your past. Always.
Yeah.
Like, you can't experience now without having it go through your past. So you have to get right with your past. You have to be proud of where you came from. I grew up in a trailer park. It took me a lot of work to be proud of growing up around meth heads and, like, all that shit, you know? Not having any money and not having shoes, things like that. I thought that these were bad things, you know? But honestly, I didn't know any difference when I was a kid. I didn't know. Like, that was awesome for me. Like, the little things, you know? Little things that I thought were cool. People might look back on now and go, oh my God, that's so terrible. But fuck that. I was fine, you know? I had a great time. But I didn't think that anybody would accept that in me. You know, the part of me that is my past makes me who I am now. So if I'm not proud of that, how can I possibly be proud of who I am now? And when I start building rapport, how am I going to be able to do that if I'm not proud of who I was, you know? And you can't do it either unless you're proud of who you were, of where you came from. Proud. I'm not saying accepting. I mean proud of where you came from. You know why you should? Because you have no fucking choice, dude. You've no choice. You can't go back and change it, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing's ever going to change. If you're proud of it and you make it who you are, and you wear it, like, you don't shove it in people's faces, but you just wear it. It's part of who you are. It's not a big deal.
Survived that shit.
Not just that, you know? That's different. That's like, I survived, I'm proud of myself. I'm saying you're proud of where you came from. Like, you are, and I can totally see... I could totally see why I would be proud if I were you, but that's from my perspective. I can see you from over here. I'm not in your head.
Can you reflect that back at me?
I already have once, but I'll do it again.
Okay.
This is very clear to me. You're closer to having no ego than anyone else, anybody, probably closer than me, because you don't have an association about who you are, because you didn't have that forced on you when you were a kid. You only have a few things that were forced on you. You didn't have people forcing beliefs on you. You realize there was confusion, and you're like, this doesn't make any sense. And then you stop believing.
Fought.
Yeah, of course. But everybody fights, though. You know, when you're a kid, everybody fights. Look, being a kid, that's what it's like to be a kid. You fight your way out of whatever your parents throw at you. Whatever it is, good or bad, doesn't matter. You know, everybody does. You know? But either way...
This is a big level of...
Maybe. But maybe not.
A mentally ill mother tried to convince me I was mentally ill, tried to get me locked into a mental institution for 10 years, from the age of 2 to 12, finally succeeded at the age of 12 when she found a child psychiatrist who was doing cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of messed me up a bit.
Yeah, but do you know my past? Do you know anything about my past?
Well, the trailer park.
That's all you know, though. You don't know anything. You don't know anything else about me. You know?
How do I be proud of... I can be proud of surviving that, making out of it.
That's easy for you to be proud of.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you've already done that.
How do I be proud of having come from that? I don't understand that.
Okay, so imagine this.
Sorry if I'm taking it too much.
No, no, this is really important. This is part of the whole process. There are three stages to figuring out who you are, really. I mean,
okay.
The truth is that whoever you are is nothing, but let's not say that for now. Let's say that who you are, like, when you get into the rapport process and you start sharing who you are... You have to share these three. These three things have to be done already.
Okay.
You can be on the third stage, but you can't be before that. Okay. The first stage is what everyone skips over. The first stage is being proud of your past. That's the first stage. The reason why you have to be proud of your past is because you're sharing who you are with someone else. And if you're not proud of where you came from, you can't know who you are because you are a collection of your past, a collection of events that happened in your past. You have to be able to look at your past and go, I'm proud that I came from that. Now, I can clearly see, again, I can clearly see why I would be proud if I were you. Because I'm going through the process right now of destroying my ego, and I have to consciously do everything that's already been done to you as a kid. Consciously. So I have to go through and go, okay, do I have a mother? No, I don't have a mother. I don't have anything. Okay, well then what does that mean? Am I alone in the world? Yes, I'm alone in the world. I don't own anything. I don't own anybody. I don't own any relationships. I'm alone in the world. And I have to fucking sit with that. Like, for real. What happens then? I get a phone call. Who is it? My mom. Is it really my mom? No. It's some lady who gave birth to me. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. You know? Now I've got a weird interaction. You know, you've already accepted all these processes. This, I have to undo this shit. You don't have to undo this. It's already undone. Now, now you've got some things that you have to undo still.
Yes.
You know? But the hard things are already done. But you don't see that because you're not looking from the perspective of what you think is the average person that you probably assume is better. But it's not better, I promise. It's not better than your life. The shit we have is stuff that we get wrapped up in and we get lost, you know? And then we die and we're like, what the fuck happened to our lives, you know? That's what we do. You
okay.
probably won't do that. I don't think you're going to be able to do that. I think that anytime you start to get into a pattern, you're going to be like, this doesn't feel right. Because you understand that discomfort is reality. It is reality. But it takes lifetimes for people to understand that. Does that make sense?
I think so. Could I ask a favor?
Sure.
Could you reflect that back to me tomorrow when I'm asleep?
Yeah. I mean, if you ask me again.
Yeah, I will ask you. Because it's obviously, I think, critically important. And if I can get over it,
yep.
I think a lot will change
yes.
rapidly.
And you can get over it. There's no doubt about it. The interesting thing, though, is that part of you is talking right now.
Mm-hmm.
The part of you now is not your ego, dude. Like, this is not your ego talking to me. The thing that was explaining your problem was your ego. You know how it's really easy to say that stuff? Because it's like, oh, blah, blah. It's like someone else is talking almost. That's ego talking.
Oh, no. I went on a search for my true voice. It's a whole other story, but with Hawaii and this yoga teacher and stuff. But.
See, this is sounds fucking awesome, dude. Like, why not that? Like, that is, that's fucking awesome sounding, you know? Like, okay, how many people do you know that do that? I mean, I lived in a tree for a while, but how many people do you know that did that? Why was I driven to the tree? Like, we're driven to these places to find the answers. We're driven by fear, usually, you know? And the earlier you have fear and you understand that you're alone, the better, you know? In the beginning, you're looking for stability because you're a child.
Yep.
But once you become an adult, all the stability you have in your life becomes this terrible weight that you're dragging, trying to swim through the ocean with, you know, and you drown with it. It kills you.
So the solution is to learn to dance.
Yeah, to learn to dance, you know? And in order to dance, you can't have some moves you can't do.
Right.
You have to be able to do every move. You have to be able to talk about your family and go, you know, I loved my mother and I was so confused. I didn't understand, you know? That's the truth, probably.
I don't, and actually it would be unhealthy if I did.
If you loved her?
Yeah.
No. If you loved her when you were a kid, you probably did. It's not about
no,
you.
I didn't.
Well, you never have ever loved your mother.
No, I've never loved my mother.
You probably don't remember back that far.
No, dude, I've been through this shit. That was never love my dad. Love my dad. Never love my mother.
Okay. Okay. So here's a question then. When you were less than 1 year old,
mm-hmm.
a tiny baby. Do you think you had the cognitive process to realize you didn't love your mother?
I didn't have the process for love at that age.
What do you mean?
Love is understanding.
No, love is
yes.
not understanding. All right. So I have this tattoo, which
okay.
is the definition of love. Tattoo.
The definition of love. Yeah.
It's not. There is no definition of love, right? The reason why I got this definition tattooed is because this conversation is so silly. To say that you understand what love is.
Fair enough.
Love is an emotion. Love, and also...
I didn't feel that far. If I can't, honestly, I don't remember back at 1 or 2, but I can actually say that's when my medical record started, around 18 to 2 months. I was brought in for not being affectionate enough.
Okay.
In her eyes.
Right.
But again,
I get that there's a lot of...
the mental disorder.
I get there's a lot of blame here, and I get that you blamed yourself for a long time, and
yeah.
I get that she... That when you found out it was her fault, it was the biggest betrayal in the universe.
It was awesome.
Well, yeah, it's awesome because it let you go, but it's also a huge
betrayal.
It was
so fucking awesome.
Well, it's good, but it's also not good.
Yeah. No,
you
it was a betrayal, but I remember the moment as being awesome.
I can imagine, because that's like, it's not my fault for real, you know?
It was vindication.
Yeah, of course, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, but you don't get that vindication. You don't get it, no one gets that vindication like you got it. You know, in that way, you don't have to love, you don't have to love her because she had your best interests in mind. You don't have to do that. You know, you can love her because you are who you are because of her. That's what I mean. That's what I mean about this. You would not be who you are at all if it wasn't for her.
Okay.
And you can't share who you are now unless you're proud of that. You know? You can't.
I'll need some time to process this.
Yeah, you'll have plenty of time to process this. And I'll talk to you about this more. This is...
because I think I can get through this shit.
You can. So there's no if.
Okay.
There's only a when. When you get through this shit.
I'd like to get through this shit sooner rather than later.
When you do, you'll understand all this stuff. And you'll be free to push forward, you know? But until then, you're going to be bouncing around a little bit. And that's okay. Accept that that's okay first, you know?
Okay,
it's going to get harder before it gets... Or worse before it gets better, essentially. Because you're going to have to go undo some shit. But not too much stuff, really. I mean, you've got
to... over the hump.
Yeah, totally. You're past the tipping point, dude. I mean, this is going to happen to you.
It's just... for me, it's really... very difficult to understand, you know, because I lost my mother in a dramatic way, and now I just can't tell ever, and I also had problems with my mother and so on, and now I just can tell anybody or want to, that everybody gives all the care and all the love to the mother that they have, because when you lose her, then you understand what the mother is. You cannot replace her, and just when you lose her, when she was living, I also didn't recognize that. And my daughter says to me, "Daddy, when grandma was there, you never, you were always so rude with her, and you never spoke about her, and so on. And now all the time you say, well, let's put the candle for grandma, and you speak about grandma, and you tell stories about her. Why now?
Right.
And so when you lose your mother, then you really understand. And
I have a feeling
what you really deserve. That's, and I really miss her, and really that was something that I regret very much. That I did everything wrong.
Yeah.
My mother was. So,
well,
if you have the luck to have your mother.
Well, I'm going to say something. This is kind of a, you guys are coming from completely different worlds. Even though you were upset with your mother before she died, and then afterwards it was like a big deal for you. But what the point you're hitting on is actually valid for you. I know it doesn't seem like it, but it is. The point is that, well, this is what I'm saying, at least. I'm not sure if this is what you're saying, but what I'm saying is that with your mother, and you had your problems with her and everything, and then while she was alive, you didn't reconcile that, right? Now, after she's gone, if you try to reconcile after she's gone, you fucking can't. It's only in you. That's when you realize that all the problems you had with your mother were inside of you the whole time. Wasn't external. So you have to kill those problems, the things inside of your mind.
I'm in the process of doing that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have reconciled in a way, which is I've told her to her face that when she dies, I'm not going to be there.
Yeah. Well, you might be there, but
I've said that to her face.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that was important.
Yeah, it was probably important, but more important to get to show her how it feels to not be loved. You know. Again, she didn't give you sympathy, so you gave her empathy. You know, this is what we do as people. We look for that ability, that moment, you know, to be able to say, you know what, now you understand, now that I have the power, and when you had the power, you fucked me over so bad. What's the one thing I know I can do for you? Guess what, you're dying alone, you know? That's it, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But that won't satisfy you. The fear that you have around this problem is really what you have to go toward. That is what you have to surrender to. The truth is that you never had control, and neither did she, but you still don't, and neither does she. Nobody has control. Surrendering to this is really the only way. It's the only way. You know,
excuse me, Robert. But for example, what if your mother committed suicide? A mother did that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the worst way to lose a mother. And then you really...
Yeah, well, you have to think about this.
And then when you are at the funeral, then...
I don't think you'd like my answer.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think it's going to be the same. I understand, if my mom committed suicide, I'd be like, why, you know? I'd be freaked out. But it's different, you know?
No, but I just want to say that maybe really, for the moment, doesn't also value his mom. The way he should. I also didn't do it. I also said stupid things to my mom, and now I regret it. I just wish that he will not be in that situation like I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I totally understand that. Yeah.
It's just
I understand.
How can I put it?
I've made my peace with the real one out there, and I'm trying to get through the one in here.
Yeah. So the situation you had is entirely different. Like, you and I are closer with our mothers than this, but it's not about the mother. It's not about that. It's about the tyranny of something over you. It's about being ruled by somebody who doesn't have your best interest in mind. That's really what it's all about, you know? It's about overcoming death. Death is going to get you too. It doesn't give a fuck. It will take you. This is about death.
Because everything also has an impact on the way you gave with women afterwards.
Yeah, of course.
So I show neediness a lot.
On accident.
Of course.
Yeah.
And my mother was a single mother, so I never had a father also. So it's probably that's why I'm so needy.
Maybe.
And of course, that's very bad. So it has an impact on your behavior.
Yeah, but you've got to let that go, the neediness. Like, you've got to let go of the mask. The thing that you think that you are, I'm telling you, the thing that you think you are is not real.
No, I just don't want other people that I know, that they also suffer the way... Now I can't cry anymore because it was so much, so like a stone, I think. But I just don't want other people to be in the same situation. And maybe I'm telling nonsense and giving a wrong advice. But maybe it's a difficult situation, but when I'm with people that are lying and I can give an advice and say something about mothers and just say, give them all your love and all your understanding, because no one understands you and loves you more than she does. Never.
That's probably true for most people. Definitely not in your case.
It would be, I mean,
But it's still the thing to do.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
The answer is still the same, though.
It would be unhealthy if I didn't love this person.
If you did?
It would be unhealthy.
That is, I don't agree with that. I think that, I understand you think you know.
Let's go the other way. Can you imagine a scenario in which it would be unhealthy to love your biological mother?
I can't imagine a scenario in which it would be unhealthy to love anything, ever. Because it's coming from you, it's an emotion from you, it doesn't go anywhere. It goes from you inside of you, the end. Like, emotions don't get transferred in the way that you're thinking, they don't come out of you and go into somebody else. You mimic them in other people.
Right.
So why would it be bad for you to love anything? It would. All you're going to do is create love in other people. That's all you're going to do. It's not going to. Nothing else is going to happen. So yeah, of course. Like, again, given the choice between a mask that is built around no love and a mask that's built around love, I don't know. I mean, I use that the negative emotion. I love the negative emotion because it fuels me. You know, it fuels me to kill my ego. Killing is not a very exciting thing to do. You know. To destroy something that is, you know, what I believe makes me who I am. That's difficult to do. But you're on that same path, man. It's a lonely path. Everyone's on it, but you're just aware that you're on it. That's all. Like, if you make peace with it, the thing that owns you right now is the thing that you swerve around. You ever heard that? You give your power to that which you swerve around? You ever heard that before?
Something like it.
That's the truth, right? Anything you think about occupies your mind. You know? I mean, I...
just gotta get over this shit.
Yeah, but it's not that easy, right? It's the person getting over that shit is made up of that shit. So you have to get over yourself. That's what I mean. It's
okay.
It's not about getting over someone else. There's a you know what? Read this book. Read Spiritual Enlightenment, The Damnedest Thing. There's a concept called spiritual autolysis.
Mm-hmm.
That's about basically writing down stuff in a way that that forces you through all your shit, basically.
Awesome.
It's really crazy and it's really stressful, but you're gonna, you know it and you understand it already, so you're gonna appreciate that very much.
Thank you.
That's a really good one. That guy's a fucking genius.
What's it called?
It's called Spiritual Enlightenment, The Damnedest Thing.
Sorry if I like.
No. The funny thing is that this is about rapport, and then you couldn't help Alberto but get sucked into it. Like, this is how powerful rapport is. He had a concept that jarred an emotion within you. And then you had to share your emotion.
I would be really happy if I could help.
Yeah, but there's
really,
I mean,
because
there's no association external. You know, there's no outside world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There is inside of you, and that's all that exists. That's all that you really know. This is all a projection of you. Everything is a part of you. You know, you are just adding associations to stuff. So what's in your brain owns you. It is you. It is you. So you have to kill yourself. You know. You have to kill that part of you. It's all got to go away, and then you got to, one at a time, put stuff back in. That's what this process is all about, you know? Like, you being a son, your mother being a mother, right, to you. Like, those are just roles that you're playing. You can't keep playing the role, but when you do, the good and the bad, everything goes out the window. Everything goes away. All of it. You just, it's like a fire. That's really what it's like. You have a fire, and you burn shit with it. That's what you do. The fire doesn't go, oh, you know what? I like this table. I'm going to leave that table intact. I'm just going to burn this shit over here. Like, it's like fucking anything that's burnable burns, and everything is burnable inside of you. Every belief you have, every thought you've ever had, any fear that you've ever had, it's all burnable, and it will burn. And the things that you have to seek out to slay, the demons you have to slay within you, those are the ones with the big black clouds around them. And somewhere in there is a belief. And when you get to that belief, you're going to kick the shit out of it, and it'll go away. That's what happens. You know, just like there's a belief that you have deep down that you should have treated your mother better. But you treated your mother like you did, and it made you who you are. Like, you are who you are because of that. Because of that whole experience, there is no good or bad. There's no good or bad at all in the whole universe. There's none. No one cares. You know? It's not like that. It's not like there's a good guy and a bad guy, or there's an evil and a good. It's not like that. There's only shit that makes you feel like terrible and lies, and then there's truth. That's all that there is. And truth isn't always good.
The belief I have to kick the shit out of that I still have, don't want to admit it, but it still lingers, is that the belief that I'm not good enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. You know? That makes total sense.
Still working on it.
Yeah. Well, that's the only thing in your life that's worth, that's the most important thing in the universe to you. Nothing else matters. You have to be, you ever read Moby Dick?
No, I haven't read it.
Moby Dick is about monomaniacal, like,
oh, I know the story, but I haven't read the book.
Ahab, Captain
yeah.
Ahab. But the book is about this process too. It's not about whale hunting.
Yeah.
It seems like it is, but it's not. It's about finding the thing that's in your way, the biggest impossible thing to kill, and then getting it first, going after it. You know the point whenever Ahab snapped and he became Captain Ahab, the crazy fucking guy, before he was Captain Ahab, the upstanding guy?
Right.
Was right before he lost his leg. Not in the moment he lost his leg, but right beforehand. He did something where he was a spiritual ritual with fire. We don't know anything else about it except that he has a scar from his neck all the way down to his leg. A burn scar. And that burn scar is burning your beliefs. That's what he did. He nuked everything. And then he found Moby Dick, right? Moby Dick was the one thing that scared him. So he was standing in a boat, just like he had been doing 1,000 other times, harpooning a whale, just like he had done 1,000 other times. But this time, for some reason, whenever his boats are being smashed and everything, which happens sometimes, he pulls out a pocket knife with a 5-inch blade, jumps in the water, and starts fucking stabbing a whale. You know? And then Moby turns around and bites his leg off, right? But this thing that he was killing is more important than anything else in his life. Why? Why is it a whale? Why? You know? It's and why is it a white whale? Because it's a wall for you to project your own fear. That's what it's about. That's what Moby Dick's about.
Yeah.
You have to jump in the water and fight the one thing that scares the shit out of you in its terrain. On its in its arena. And you're going to do it with something impossible, a tiny fucking knife. And it's going to kill you. Does that make sense?
Yep.
It's going to take you away. Because the you that's there is going to die with it. Does that make sense?
Yep.
This is going to change your fucking life, man.
No, I know. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Yeah, this is great.
No,
it doesn't suck at all. It's scary, but it doesn't suck.
Okay.
It's amazing.
You said there are three things you need to
know. The first one is being proud of your past.
Yeah.
You have to. If you skip that stage, which everybody does pretty much, then you cannot connect with anybody ever. You know?
Yeah.
The second one is you have to understand the content and the context of the people around you. Body language, if you can, that's a really good one. But basically, the content and the context of what other people are saying. That's the three questions are this. They are, wait. You know what? Let me just do it this way. The three questions are, who am I? That's number one you got to answer. And that's actually three things. That is, you're being proud of your past, your positive qualities of your heroes, and then your happiness in the future. You have to have all three of these things in your mind, and that makes up who you are. Okay? So if you're not proud of your past, so being proud of your past,
mm-hmm.
recognizing the positive qualities of your heroes, and then knowing what happiness looks like in your future. The way you do that is imagine yourself 20 years down the road. Don't imagine anything about yourself at all, but imagine first that you're perfectly content and happy, you don't want anything, and then let the world materialize around you in your mind. And that's how you know what your future looks like. Then you head toward that thing, you know, whatever the reality is. You can ask your future self, your future happy, content self questions, and it will answer you. It will tell you what you need to do, you know?
Okay.
That's who you are, right? And then you get into who are you, which is the second question you answer. Who are you is the content and the context of the people around you, the body language, reading people, essentially, understanding people. And then the final question, which is the question we're always asking ourselves, is how do I show you who I am, right? That's what interaction is. How do I show you who I am? But in order to show someone who you are, you have to know who you are, and you have to know who they are, because they can only accept certain parts of you. So you have to show them parts that they're ready to accept, because you know them. So you're like, okay, here's this part. They're like, oh, wow, great. So then you figure out, how do I show you who I am? So who am I? Who are you? How do I show you who I am? These are the questions of life. You know, these are the questions of Maya, really, of society, of ego. Once you have all three of these questions answered, you master ego. That's how it is. You master living in ego. You don't master getting rid of ego. You know, because who am I really is nobody. And who are you? Nobody. How do I show you who I am? The answer is why. You know, that's a true answer. But that's living outside of society. That's living outside of this whole system, right? Mm. So, that who am I part, the proud of your past part, is only one section of that. You also have to find the positive qualities of your heroes, which empowers you, right? It lets you know there's a direction to go in. And then it lets you know what you're working on currently. And then seeing yourself happy in the future gives yourself a goal to shoot toward. If you don't have those three things, you can't move forward.
Gotcha.
And that's how you figure out who you are. That's how you become someone, right? That's how you build a mask that works for you, not for anybody else. It works for you in this world. Okay, so we'll go a little bit more, and then you guys are going to go out and do your field work. I know this is pretty really heavy, but stick with me on this, okay? So the point is that rapport sucked everybody into this, and this conversation got really deep and heavy, you know, because this is what rapport does. We're attempting to transfer emotion, you know. Mm. Only you can't throw anything at me that will phase me. No matter what you say about your past or anything, nothing phases me. Why? Because I've considered everything already. Everything. So there's nothing you can tell me that I haven't considered, that I haven't imagined myself in the middle of, that I haven't known there's a part of me that would do that, that would be in that situation, you know, that has experienced even at a tiny level whatever it is that you're talking about. You know, if I exacerbate that in my mind, then fuck, I'm in pain. I'm in terrible pain, you know? So I know, I understand. I didn't go through it because I wasn't forced to go through it. That was my experience of life, you know? But nothing you can say will shock me or make me turn away because I've got my shit handled in my head. I know already. And you can see that talking to me, you know? Most people don't have their shit handled, so whenever a curveball comes, they don't know what the fuck to do, you know? So you got to get yours handled because otherwise you're just flinging curveballs at everybody.
Yeah.
And no one expects it at all. And that's your trump card. Your trump card is that they're not going to see this coming, you know? So, and that's been something that you've used in the past, but don't use that anymore because it's not fair to anybody because now they can't do anything. It's like, what are they supposed to do back to that? They can't do anything. Like, what am I going to say? If I don't have my shit handled and you say that?
Oh, yeah, okay, got it. Yeah,
how am I gonna help you? I can't do anything, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm like, well, it's okay. What the fuck am I going to say to you, you know? So you have to get your own shit handled so you're not slinging curveballs impulsively, you know?
Right.
You don't want to impulsively be throwing these crazy things they can't accept yet. Most people who have serious trauma, by the way, that's not the worst story I've heard, just so you know.
Oh, no, there's more to it, and I'm sure there's even worse.
Oh, man, I had... I've had stuff that made me cry when I heard it.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, I didn't have my shit handled at the time, but it was really, really, really bad. I've never experienced anything like that before. I mean, it's bad. Don't get me wrong. You know, there is no bad or good, but it's intense. You know, that's what I mean. But that guy ran away with his tail between his legs. He always ran from it. His whole life, he ran from it. And just don't let that be you. You know, face the whale, and it will kill you. That's the thing. It'll kill you. I know it's strange and it's really weird to hear that, but it's going to kill your ego is what I mean, you know? Your body will survive. The only thing that will survive will be like the God part of you, that fucking untouchable. The part that you see in me, the part that you aspire to be in me, actually, that you see in me that you like, that's the part. And I'm telling you, I'm giving it to you right now.
Yeah.
That's how you do it. But you got to take it, of course, which is son of a bitch, you know? But you can do it. So anyway, so that was... what we did there was go bounce between wide rapport and deep rapport over and over and over again. This is what it really looks like. It's like a crazy web of different threads of conversation, you know? Like where certain things will happen, And then I'll have a reaction to that thing, and then we'll talk about that reaction to that thing. But everything at the end of the day is about my I perspective, which is where I tell stories from my perspective, not from like a, you know, whenever you blah, 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 because no one understands that stuff. Like if I go, oh, when you grow up in a trailer park, you have weird friends, and your weird friends are weird trailer park kids, and so you think they're normal, right? You're like,
no.
I never grew up in a trailer park. I don't know what you're talking about, and I don't have weird trailer park friends. It's like, you understand what I really mean, but you can't connect with me because you're always going, nope, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what you're talking about, you know? So instead, if I said, when I grew up in a trailer park, I had these really weird trailer park kids who were friends of mine, and then I just hung out with my weird trailer park friends. You're like, okay, you just accepted all of that. That hit you. Not that there was anything real behind it, you know? It was just that it got through to you, right? The I perspective is the most powerful perspective to have when you're building rapport. I always start sentences in rapport with, I don't know about you, but for me, blank. And then I just go into whatever it is I'm talking about. This is an important phrase. I don't know about you, but for me, blah, 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 right? Once you go through rapport and you build that a couple times, let's say two or three times is enough to really have serious rapport. Like, you don't have to keep going. After you do it a couple times, when you get done with the rapport, you release it. Like, right now, I released the rapport, so we, like, went back to something else, and it's like we're back up to lighter rapport. And we can go deeper again, but every time we do that, you'll feel... First off, I know that if I keep doing this with you, you'll start to trust me a ton. Like, I will be... You probably already trust me, but you'll really trust me.
I also see the technique.
But you can't, though. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you see the technique or not.
Yeah.
The trust is still there, regardless of what you do. That's what I'm saying. It's a two-way street. That's what I mean when I say that. Like, regardless of whether or not you see the technique or you know a technique is happening or whatever, and you use it with a girl or whatever it is you're doing, it still happens. It bypasses all that shit because it's subconscious. So consciously, it doesn't matter if you see the technique. Like right now, if it was the two of us, which you'd probably feel more comfortable if it was, then you would be different. A, I'd be calling you on every little tiny thing you're doing. Like you've got a lot of little weird body language stuff that you do to shrug it off.
Yep.
I would just fucking throw it in your face. I would show you everything you're doing, and then you'd be paralyzed with, you won't be able to react like that. You won't be able to shrug it off, you know? But this shrugging it off.
I don't like that though. Be valuable.
I know you would. And I can do that for you. It's not a big deal, but I won't do it right now,
yeah.
Of course. But the shrugging it off is what's making it so you can't receive my emotion, you know? Because in order to do that, you have to take on someone else's feelings and you have a serious, you know, adversement to that because for whatever obvious reasons, you know, I would say. So taking on other people's emotions as being like a vessel for it without taking it on as to who you are is really the difficult part, and that's that you do by just sitting there and taking it from somebody. I mean, you let go of your shit and you take on whatever it is that they say. They give it to you, you experience it for a second, and you let go, you know? And that's what rapport is. You experience the emotion for a minute and then you release it. That's why the final stage is called release. Does that make sense?
So, I mean, which part of this was deep rapport? I mean, you really got into this deep.
As soon as I stopped asking questions about stuff,
mm-hmm.
It was deep rapport. And it stayed down there, and then it went up a little bit every once in a while to wide. Any time that we had like a zoom out for a second, you know, or we changed the subject to something else, or it flowed into something new, it became a new deep rapport, you know, like a new version of deep rapport. Is that making sense?
Mm-hmm.
I know this is kind of like crazy and hard to put your finger on, and also I'm sure everyone always thinks they understand this, but no one really does. It's the one thing I do really fucking well. Is build deep rapport, and it's the most powerful thing you can do in this process is build deep rapport. So if you don't know how to do it really, really well, then you're giving up the most powerful tool you have. I'm saying that knowing that your goal may be just to get fucked. It's possible that that's your goal. If that is your goal, it's still the most powerful tool that you have in your tool belt, period. Everything else doesn't really matter as much as this does. This matters more than everything. So it's really, really important that you understand it. So if it's hard, I mean, we have it recorded, so if you guys want to listen to it again, you can, you know, so you can kind of go through it again. Oh, hey, there you go. So if you want to listen to that, you can hear it
again.
Yeah. And you can hear yourself too, which is really cool. But ultimately, this is the stage. This is the thing where all the love happens. And if you get a girl to the bedroom and you haven't done this properly, then she will not trust you in the bedroom. She'll be like naked in your bed and she won't have sex with you. It's like, it will happen. If it's ever happened to you before, you know how frustrating that is. It's like really frustrating. So ultimately, you have to be able to build this rapport, and you have to be able to do it openly, and you have to be able to accept them and their rapport, and you have to give them your rapport. Like I said, the easiest way to do this is to take something from your childhood that's positive and relate whatever it is that you're that she's telling you about back to your childhood, and then bring it back to the present again. Like, when I was a kid, this happened, and I used to feel this way, and every day I see this thing, I think of that thing in the past, the end, right? It just gives her a sense that you're a real person, you know, that you actually have a process that's human, you know, that you go through. So once you get through that, and you've done that a couple times, you go into seduction. Seduction's difference is you become a man in seduction. This is where you show the man part of you. This is where you kind of tear away all the other parts. And the thing that was left over is sexual intrigue and sexual tension mixed with more curiosity. This is what seduction is. Creating curiosity with sexual tension. So it's kind of like banter, but with sex added into it. Sex appeal. The thing to know about seduction is that at this point, you almost have a completely internal frame. As in, now it's like you're not getting feedback anymore, you know? I mean, you're going to get feedback from her. If she's, like, uncomfortable, you're going to stop for a moment, but that's about it. And girls will say no, and they mean yes, and girls will say yes, and they mean no. So really, you have to do your due diligence. You have to, like, make sure that she's 100%, you know, on whatever it is that she's telling you. So I've had girls say yes, but I can see in their body language they're not comfortable, and I would stop, you know? And they'd be like, no, I want you to, but I know if I do it that it's going to be a regret, so I don't do that, you know? Usually it's because I don't have enough rapport, anyway. The more rapport you build, the more comfortable she is, the more she's open to taking that step with you, you know? And I've had girls that said no, and then their body language just saying yes, and I would just be like, make out with her. If she kept going, I would keep going. As long as she's still there, I was still there too, you know? But there's a very fine line, you know, to walk in this area for seduction. And the thing to do is usually just to proceed with caution, you know? One thing I did is if a girl was ever like, no, stop, you know, I would be like, oh, stop? Okay. And I would totally fucking stop. And she was like, no. You can go. Just go a little slower. Like, you know, she'd be like, okay, well, now I'll get the truth out. I want to hear out loud, fuck me, you know? Like, I want to hear that from her. So I would get her to say that sort of thing, you know? This is the area where you can stop doing something and it creates a shitload of tension. You can keep doing something and it creates a shitload of tension. You know, ultimately, seduction is all about teasing. It's all about knowing she wants something and not giving it to her on purpose. And she has to know that you're purposely not giving it to her, that you're making her wait for no reason at all, other than that you like making her wait. And you like that excitement. You get excited seeing her struggle, not struggle, I guess that could be exciting, but you get excited seeing her nervous and not know what to do and things like that, you know? Again, this is an idea that I carried over from attraction into rapport or into seduction. You know, the idea that I like flirting with girls and making them nervous, like drawing them into that nervous tension. Same kind of nervous tension happens in seduction. Only what I do a lot is I'll like lean in to kiss a girl, and as soon as I know she's going in to kiss me too, which by the way you can tell by eye accessing cues. Like she starts doing what's called triangulating. Have you guys seen this or learned this yet?
Yeah.
Where she starts looking at your mouth a bunch. If you look at her mouth a bunch and then she starts looking at your mouth back, she wants to kiss you. Period. That's how it is. So if you don't kiss her, then you let that ship sail. It goes away. And usually you can't get it back. You can't swim after that boat.
You're like,
oh. Yes. Shit. Okay,
so
well,
you see
all
that
work
go
on.
For it?
Totally. But the best thing to do is, I find, is to make her go for it. Because I like to create that tension, you know? So I say, my thing that's worked for me like a ton of times that I really love is saying it's okay out loud. It's okay. She's like, what's okay? Like, you can kiss me. I want to kiss you too. And then you lean in just a little bit and she fucking makes out with you. That is this shit is so money. You will use that a lot. That's a really good one. You will use it until you don't need to use it anymore because you've got some other thing that's better, you know? What is happening?
It's a wedding. It's a wedding.
Can we shut the window?
I know, it's hilarious.
Friday and Saturday are wedding days.
Oh, really?
10:10 to be,
Good, I guess. There's a wedding outside the window. God damn. It's like, has to happen. So, anyway, that's, once you start making out with her, the important thing then is to not ask too many questions. To not, like, stop and be like, so do you want to, like, get out of here or something? To be like, let's get out of here. Everything is like caveman. Like, let's go. Let's do this. Like, you're making all the decisions. If she's coming with you, then she's consenting to come with you. But that's all that she's doing. She's passively just coming along with you, you know, going somewhere else. It's always best, I found, to bounce between a couple different places until you get to seduction, just because you can build more attention that way. But when you get to seduction, you got to take her somewhere that you know, you two can be alone unless she's into public sex, you know? This is uncomfortable for a lot of guys. Like they don't really know how to go for it. They're afraid of, like, coming across as aggressive and things like that. But aggressiveness is one of the most attractive qualities in a man during seduction. If you built rapport and she feels connected to you, then going into seduction is going to be a cakewalk. It'll be very, very easy. But if you haven't touched it all, it's going to be impossible. Because all the rapport that you built, you have to anchor it to your touch. Because there's something called emotional anchors. When you trust or any kind of emotion that you have, actually, if there's something that happens every time, you get a Pavlov trigger, like a trigger in your mind that creates that emotion every time. And if you touch her, like, in a natural way while you're going through the rapport process, then when you get to seduction, you'll have already broken the touch barrier, and then it'll be easy for her to feel comfortable with you, because that trust will be attached in her mind to you touching her. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, she won't feel comfortable with you touching her. That's just how it is, you know? I mean, here, I haven't touched you at all, except shook your hand, right? So if I do this, it's very strange, right? Or like this, you know, it's very strange. But if I was talking to you like this for a while, and we're talking like this, you know, blah, 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 and then I was like this to you, it's not so weird. Once you break the touch barrier, and you anchor something to touch, anchor emotion, positive emotion, especially trust, which is what happens in rapport, once you anchor that to touch, then you can carry that into seduction. But if you don't do that, you will never go to seduction. You have a lot of friends that are girls, and that is all that you will have, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I have a lot of friends that are girls, but I also have a girlfriend, you know, and I touch her. So if you want to get sexual with a girl, you have to have that in mind, but you can't want that. You can't need that in the beginning, otherwise you come across as needy. It's a weird game of mental gymnastics, like I said. Like, you have to trick yourself into being okay with not wanting anything, and then change your mind halfway through, and then change your mind again, you know? It's like, but you can do it. You can do it, just step back. If you're not associating yourself as the person who is doing all the talking, if you're the witness, the person who's kind of watching yourself do all this, then you can choose what to do. You can pull out personality traits whenever you want to and make decisions. That's the genius part of you. You know, otherwise you're just reacting to everything. Like, this is who I am, and I'm nobody else, and I have to do this, and this is what I do, you know. If there's anything that you do, then stop. You know, start something else. Become something different. Find out other parts, other roles you can play. Because again, all of this that you see here is all a role. You know, everything you see or seem is but a dream within a dream. Is just a dream within a dream, or is but a dream within a dream?
It's but a dream within a dream. Let me check real quick.
Yeah, he just got this tattoo, you guys.
You want me to share that experience? So, in the last couple of weeks, I've been going through this process that you guys are starting today. Well, I've been doing it for a long time, but in the last couple of weeks, shit got really real, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I faced some of my biggest fears. And I've had one fear for quite a long time of doing something that would change the way that people perceived me, you know? And I knew that a tattoo in a really visible place was like, that was like the white whale of it, you know? Mm-hmm. Also, I had an association with, like, being afraid of pain, like, physical pain. I sort of prided myself on being a more, like, emotional, sensitive guy or something like that. And that was my, kind of like my consolation for
feeling like I was always sort of weak as a kid compared myself to other guys. So anyways, getting a tattoo was really terrifying for me, or it would have been terrifying for me, but I saw the opportunity to face something that I was really afraid of, and I just, like, embraced it, you know? I was like, it's great. It's going to hurt a lot, you know? And people are going to have a lot to say about it, and a lot of people are not going to like it. And that's, I don't know, it's exciting now to just kind of face that. And as I was, I had a fear of needles, and I had a fear of pain, and I always thought if I got a tattoo, if I did, it would be something that I thought a really long time about, and it would have to be perfect, and done by a great artist, and then I would also just kind of, like, just close my eyes until it was done, basically, you know, like, oh, cool, I went through that crappy process, but now I have something neat that I can be proud of, but it wasn't really like that. I watched every second of it, and it hurt a lot, you know. I don't know if any of you guys have tattoos, but it hurts really bad, and I watched every second of it, and I just, you know, breathed and witnessed it, I guess. I wasn't like, oh, this sucks, or, oh, this is really cool, I'm excited about my new tattoo. It wasn't like that. It was just like, I'm experiencing pain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely new for me, and it was something that in the past was really scary for me. So that's just one example for me of this process that I'm going through and will continue to go through, of recognizing an opportunity to face a fear and going, here we go, you know, and just standing there and experiencing it. So.
Well, this is what facing a fear really looks like. It's not like some, you know...
It's not like, argh.
Yeah, it's not like that. It's like surrendering to your fear.
Yeah.
It is the one thing that you're afraid of, exposing yourself to it until you're not afraid of it anymore. You know? That's what it is. That's how you actually kill the white whale. You know? And the reason why is because a part of you died when you did that. The part of you that was afraid to do that. The part of you that told you that wasn't okay. The part of you that would hold on to hope that you would be able to be normal someday.
Yeah.
That part died.
And there's this, we'll talk more about this. I know it'll come up as you guys start to experience this, but there's a part of you that will start to make justifications, like consolations, really.
Mm-hmm.
When you start facing fears and going, okay, like as she started, as the tattoo artist, this was just a few days ago, by the way, so
okay.
This is really fresh for me, physically, mentally, spiritually. And as she started, I was like, there's no going back now. I'm there, and I'm watching it happen. Like, she has already made permanent changes to my skin, you know? And immediately, what my ego did was to go, you know what? It's going to be really cool. The design that she made looks really neat. People are really going to like this tattoo. And immediately, it was like, it's okay. I'm going to have approval from lots of people. And then I was like, no, that's not the point. That's not the point, you know? I don't need approval. And every time that started happening, because there's all these processes we have that are like, it's okay. It's okay. Once your ego, like, accepts that thing is happening, it's like, it's okay. At least you'll get money for this. Or
exactly. There's some kind of consolation for
exactly,
you.
Yeah, exactly.
Doo-doo, have this beautiful prize.
But there isn't a consolation. That's all there is the experience, you know? Does that make any sense? I experienced it in a really raw way, so I appreciate you guys listening to this.
Was that first one, was that on the airplane? Was that the first time you did that? Like something like
just
that?
Experiencing a huge fear?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
that was a good one. That was when I recognized the consolation in Brad.
Yeah.
I saw that.
I couldn't see these consolations, and that's why, you know, we're going to share that with you, so you'll be able to see that, because that's something that happens naturally, is you're like, all right, cool, I'm fighting my fears, you know, I'm really taking this on, you know, I'm going to destroy my ego, but there's this secret secondary process that happens that I didn't recognize, and I don't know if you want to explain the airplane.
Well, I can tell you my version of that, too. What, when I was destroying my ego the first time, 10 years ago, I got to a point where I realized I wanted to destroy my ego so that I could come back and tell people I did it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I was like, what the fuck am I thinking? Like,
yeah.
Because your ego is committing suicide. That's what's happening. It's not that your ego, it's not your, you are killing your ego. You are your ego. And when you kill it, it's like you're killing yourself, you know, yourself, your quote unquote self, you know, your ego. So and all these labels that you guys have about who you are and who you can be and who you can't be, that's all bullshit. It's all ego. So killing those things is really strange. You'll trick yourself into not being able to do something. And I was like, well, it's an egotistical thing to kill my ego. So what the fuck am I doing? So I realized I either had to leave society or figure society out. That's when I decided to figure society out. And I was like, I could clearly see it. It was like as plain as the nose of my face. So it was really easy to see at that point. Because I didn't have any bullshit crowding my head, you know, where I couldn't see anything. I was seeing people for who they really were, and it was really comfortable for me to do that. So when you get to that place, you can make decisions from there, but from here, you can't do that, you know? But anyway, this is the process that you guys are going to be going through. This is the overarching concept. That's one of the reasons why we hit on this a lot in the first day, because this is the overarching belief and idea behind the entire program, the whole reason why you're here. Is to be alive again, not just to pick up chicks. It's not about picking up chicks. It's about waking up, you know? And it's about freeing yourself from the lies. The lies that you think you're not good at it. The lies that you don't think you can be good at it. Not just that, but at anything, you know? Or the lie that you need it in the first place. It's a really strange thing to come to a program that you paid for and then have someone say you don't need this program. I mean, I understand that, but I'm not going to lie to you. If you understood that right now and you're like, fuck this, I'm leaving, I would totally give you a refund. There's no doubt about it. You know? I mean, okay. But it will have done its job. That's what you're here for. You're not here to pick up chicks. You're here to wake up. I want you to know that. Because that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach you how to pick up chicks. But that's not the point. That's just holding place so that you can have a reason to wake up. Because otherwise your ego is going to start interfering with everything, trying to get you not to wake up. You know? But your ego knows that it can't give you what I'm going to give you. You don't have what I'm going to give you. You don't have the knowledge I'm going to give you. So guess what? I'm wrapping it. I'm covering the broccoli in cheese so that you eat the broccoli. You know, you're gonna eat it. You're gonna like it. You're gonna eat that and you're gonna like it. You're gonna get nothing and like it. But ultimately, what Brad's going through is something that I'm going through. You know, I'm going through these. I'm finding these demons too in myself. That's my goal. That's your goal too. That is your life purpose. You just don't see it clearly yet. But it is. It's why you're here.
So you have a purpose.
Well, as much as you can have a purpose, you know? But I don't really. The purpose is not like to... It's not like when I do that, I'm done. It's that when I do that, there's nothing left to want to do anything else, you know? It's a really strange thing. It's the thing that you consider to be you that thinks that has a purpose and stuff, that I don't have that. I use that. I mean, I can bring it up. This is right now. This is part of my personality. So, like, I'll be here, and then I'll leave this place, this room, and I'll go back, instantly, go back to nothing and nobody. You know? I won't do anything I don't want to do. I won't say anything I don't want to say. I just, if I feel like walking, if Kelsey's with me, and she goes left, and I feel like going right, guess what? I go right. If I never see her again, I never see her again. You know? And I love this girl. She's like the woman of my dreams. This is what I mean. You face the scariest shit in the world to you. One of my biggest fears was to lose Kelsey, you know, after going back and getting her forever, like taking spending forever to do that. Now, as you guys get women, you're going to be getting attachments. You're going to be having to do this anyway. There's no way I would teach you this. I would stop teaching right now if I couldn't weave this message into my teaching, because this message is all there really is, all the truth. No amount of money can make me lie to you, you know. That's just how it is. So... okay, you know, here you are. And here you are sitting here still and still learning. And you know what you're up against. And I want you to know that. You're jumping off the boat into the water and you're stabbing a fucking whale with a pocket knife. That's what you're doing right now. And it's going to get pissed. And it's going to bite you back. It will do that. And it'll take a piece of you with it. You'll lose a piece of you. That's why Ahab lost his leg. That's what losing the leg is for Ahab, you know, in Moby Dick. Anyway. I know this is all very heavy, but it's about to get lighter because you guys are about to go to day game. So it's 5:30 right now. We went a little bit over, a little bit longer than I really wanted to. But you got the concept. We went through most of the map of interaction. We didn't get to relationship balance, but that's not the most important part of this process. You're not going to be dealing with relationship balance while you're here, and you can always read about it later. And there's more to it than that anyway, so don't worry about it. For now, this is the process you will be going through. You mastering this process is you proving to yourself that you can do this, okay? This is what you're doing. Prove to yourself you can do it. Prove to yourself that you can become this if you want to. That way, if you don't want to be it, you don't have to. But you at least have a choice then. Okay? I know we already agreed to do this, but I wanted to get an extra agreement in there from you guys, just to make sure. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you guys about ready to rock it from the crypt? Yeah? Okay. All right, guys. Is there any other questions at all about anything? I know we talked about a fuckload of stuff, and it was really intense. And we have a lot more. I have a lot more to teach you. Tomorrow's going to be a really packed day. And I already taught you a lot already today, but are there any questions about anything in particular that you want to know? Feel free to just say it if you do have a question. Everyone understands everything. That's fantastic. So when you go out today, let me explain the exercise for today, because this is really going to be exciting. This game is called, well, we used to call it 50 Signatures. We still call it that, actually, but it's not really what it is. 50 Signatures is basically an exercise that I've done. I will never ask you guys to do anything I haven't done. But it's an exercise where you have a piece of paper and you go out to some public place and you ask 50 people you've never met before. Doesn't have to be hot girls or anything. Only a few, definitely at least a few that are attractive, you know, or people that you like. But in general, you meet people you don't know and you ask them if they'll give you their first three impressions of who you are. And they're going to tell you. And you either write them down or you let them write them down. You know, preferably you give it to them and they write them down. That way they're not like, you know, trying to be nice. They'll just tell you straight up what it is. And then you ask them to give you to initial next to it. Like just write their first and last initial. Like the my name is Josh Pelsier, so JP. I'd put JP next to it. We used to get signatures, but people got weirded out by signatures because they're like, why are you getting my signature? Like that's a strange thing to want, you know. Thank you. Take a picture of it and go put it on a document. but ultimately, you get your there are three first impressions of you, and then you get their initials, and you do it with 50 people, and you're going to be doing this until you're done, okay? It's a lot of work, but you get in a roll, and you get it done. It happens fast, trust me. When you come back, you'll have patterns to look at. That's really what's interesting. The things that you see are patterns in what other people see in you. It's what your mask is showing people. You get to see the truth about what people see. You know, some of it will be good, and some of it will not be good. You'll have to sit with the things that aren't good, and you have to look at all the things that are good, and you have to compare them and know what it is that you're sending out. You'll know what you need to work on, you know, at least what other people are seeing in that moment. Now, hey, Connor, or Brad, how about you? Okay, he's probably in the bathroom. Do you want to use want them to use their notebooks, or do we have paper separate?
You guys use your notebooks, it'll be best.
Okay. So for you, Alberto, since you have a tiny notebook, you can just do like one or two per page and then move on to the next page. Here's what I would usually do. If you want to like make this really easy for yourself, then one of the things you can do is just tell them that you're doing this for a psychology experiment or something. If you don't feel like saying that, you can just tell them the truth, or you can say it for a job interview and they made you go do this. But like, the only person who's going to be able to say it's her job interview is you, Alberto, because you're wearing interview clothes, but no one else is. Like, you went to an interview looking like that? That's strange, you know? So what you want to do instead is go through the process of figuring out what you're going to say. I was saying I'm in a class, and this is part of an experiment that we're doing, which is totally true. So if you want to say that, that's what I would say. And then they'll take you out to where you need to go, and they'll answer any questions that you have about anything. And it's easier to get more if you write something at the top of your page. Like, for you, it might be a number or something, like whatever number it is that you're on, you know, so they know coming in. And then make, like, columns for things, like 1, 2, 3, like, so they can see the three first impressions, you know. That way it's easier for them and they get on a roll with it. But if you hand them a blank piece of paper, they're going to be like, they won't really know what to do. So anyway, that's something you want to do. So this is called 50 Signatures. It is It will plow through any approach anxiety that you have. By the time you're done with this, you will not have approach anxiety for the rest of the day. You know, and when you go out tonight, you won't have very much. But you might still have some, but you won't have very much left then either. So important, though, it's really important that you approach everybody, that you're not just picking and choosing people because you want something from them, you know? Again, this is practice on how to not want anything from anybody, to treat people exactly the same across the board. To not go, oh, she's hot, I want to go talk to her. Don't pick and choose. Just go, okay, old lady, great. You know, and you're going to have a great time with it because you don't speak German. So your first question is going to be, do you speak English? Okay, hey, there's an experiment. That's fucking weird, dude. You're gonna have to figure it out, you know?
Yeah, but that's what
it's all about. That's what this is all about. So, yeah, or maybe you learn a little bit of German to figure this out. But either way, I'm sure you can. I'm sure it'll work. You know, you guys, I've done this. Brad, you've done it, right?
Yeah.
Connor, have you done this?
Yeah.
So everyone's done this except you guys. It's not nearly as hard as giving roses to girls. That actually is more fun, I think. But but you know, that's me. But it is definitely difficult, and you guys are going to have an interesting time doing it. Tonight, your goal after you do this is you'll come back. You all meet. You don't need to come back here. So you might want to take. You can though. Okay, you guys can let them come back here and get their stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can leave your shit here if you want to. This room will be locked, so your stuff should be safe. The point though from this exercise today is to face the idea, the truth, that when you have something to do that's not pick up a chick, when you talk to people, you're not scared to talk to people. It gets really easy to talk to people. You know, that's the point behind this exercise. And you're going to see that today as you start doing this. After about like the fifth one, you're going to be like, fuck yeah. You're going to get in a groove, dude. You're going to be like, everybody you talk to, it's going to be like, hey. So if you want to stop somebody on walk, I'll let you guys actually do the buzzer explanation stuff when you're out there, because that might be better to do it in context. So you guys can go ahead and go do that.